Today, unseen liabilities, debts and obligations that you may not be e able to easily see when you're looking at a business that you might be considering buying.
I'm David C. Barnett, and you're tuned in to Small Business and Deal Making, the podcast, YouTube channel, and blog where I talk about buying, selling, financing, and managing small and medium-sized businesses while controlling risk. So if you're looking to take control of your future through buying a business one day, or if you already own a business and you're looking to grow or exit, you've come to the right place. I talk about interesting things, I talk to interesting people, and I answer your questions every week right here. So be sure to hit like and be sure to hit subscribe, and let's get to it. Are you thinking of growing your business or beginning a journey into entrepreneurship? Take a shortcut to success by buying an existing and profitable business the right way. Visit businessbuyeradvantage.com and learn more about my online training, group coaching, and consulting services designed to help you win.
All right. So someone gave me a book the other day, and I started reading the book. And the book opens up with a story where the author talks about a particularly trying situation they were in with their business, in which the business performance declined. And they decided that one of the things that they could try to do was just to sell the business. And they realized through selling the business that their business was worth less than zero. And a big part of that had to do with unseen or unfunded liabilities within their company. And I was reading the story and I thought, you know what, this might make a good video for the channel. So that's what we're going to talk about today is unseen liabilities. And we're going to start with a couple of definitions and a couple so that we can all follow along, and we're going to do a quick balance sheet review of what the balance sheet is and how it works. So unseen liabilities is just a catch-all term that I've coined this morning, I think, unless you've heard it somewhere else, I don't know. But I mean it to capture a couple of other things. So one would be unfunded liabilities, which are liabilities or obligations that a company might have for which it doesn't have the money. And these may not be secret in any way, and they might be totally known, but there's no way for the company to pay them. And then the other thing would be off-sheet obligations or liabilities. So it's an obligation that the company has, which for some reason doesn't appear on its balance sheet. So these are important because the whole idea behind financial statements is to give the reader an idea of what is going on in the business and to know that there could be liabilities that a business faces that are not appearing on the balance sheet means that literally what you're looking at is not going to tell you the whole story. So for a quick recap, I've drawn a balance sheet up here. Balance sheet on my whiteboard, and I'll walk through it verbally for those that are listening. So, on the traditional balance sheet on one side, you've got assets. So, this would be cash, accounts receivable, any kind of stuff, vehicles, equipment, inventory, all that kind of stuff is all on the asset side of the balance sheet. And you add that up, and whatever it adds up to as far as the value, that's the assets of the business. On the other side, we've got the liabilities and the equity. So, if you think about a house, okay, let's say a house is worth $1 million and there's a $600,000 mortgage on the house. That would be the debt, the liability. The equity, which I've written there, accumulated value belong that is owned by the shareholders. So in the case of this house example, if you had a $1 million house with a $600,000 mortgage, the equity would be $400,000, right? So if it turns out that in reality, the mortgage was not $600,000, it was actually $700,000. What would that mean? It wouldn't impact the value of the house, still a $1 million house. What would happen if we discovered the mortgage balance was somehow incorrect or misunderstood is that the equity would be lower, right? So if that mortgage was actually 700, the equity would be 300. And that is what I'm trying to get at when I talk about the risk or challenge in unseen liabilities. If they're not represented on the balance sheet, or we don't know that these liabilities exist, obviously it has an impact on the past performance of the business or an impact on what the future may hold. And I'll get back to the story that that is from the book, an impact on what the value of a business might be if you're contemplating a transaction. So there's two kinds of ways that liabilities of a business may not appear on the balance sheet, two buckets. The first one is error. The people who are maintaining the books are just not doing it correctly. They've made mistakes, and so there's a couple of ways that that this can happen that I've recorded. So the first one is deferred revenue. So this is when a business collects money in advance for services that have yet to be rendered. And I've made a couple of videos that talk about this before. So one of them is from way back in 2015 called Small Business Liabilities Hidden in Plain Sight. And we'll put a link to that video up here somewhere so you can click over and watch it. And then there was another one in 2019 called Why Are There So Many Fitness Businesses for Sale, in which I talk a lot about deferred revenue because it's a business category that sees a lot of this, and I've rarely ever seen it accounted for correctly. And so deferred revenue, if you're going to buy a business and they've been collecting money from customers for services yet to be delivered, and you buy that business without understanding that, and they're not reported on the balance sheet, then that means that you just bought a business and you now have to serve those customers, and the seller got the money, right? So that's not going to work. I mean, you need to earn money for the work that you're doing when you buy a business. So this would be an example of where understanding a business's model and understanding the flow of cash and how things work is going to be critical, and that kind of issue is particularly going to be painful for people that are not well versed in a particular business model or particular industry. Those buyers are going to be more susceptible to this. The next thing would be unrecorded purchases. So there's two kinds of accounting. There's cash accounting and accrual accounting. Cash accounting in a lot of places can't be used legally in a lot of jurisdictions around the world. In the US, it can be used. Accrual accounting matches the expense or revenues with the activity when it happened. So I'll give you an example. If I receive a phone bill from the phone company saying, you just had a month of service, you owe us $100, right? What technically should be happening under accrual accounting is that I should record that in my accounting software saying I used $100 worth of phone company service and I owe the money. So on the balance sheet, there's going to be a liability called accounts payable for $100 because, of course, the phone bill isn't due that day. It's due maybe in 3 weeks' time or something like that. So then in 3 weeks' time, when I pay the phone bill, the account payable will go down on the balance sheet along with the cash that was used to pay the bill, right? Now, do most small businesses do that? No, they don't. I had a guest on the channel a couple of years ago, Elliot Holland from Guardian Due Diligence. And in some of my conversations with Elliot, he said that when he does due diligence on a small business, he almost always finds a mixture of cash and accrual accounting. So what does that mean? Well, for example, in most small businesses, when that phone bill comes in, they're not going to record it as a bill that has yet to be paid. What they're going to do is they're going to leave it on a desk somewhere in a pile of bills that need to be paid. And then when they pay the bill, they're going to then record it as an expense on that day. And over the course of the year, all the phone bills are going to be recorded. So over the course of the year, there will be an accurate representation of the expense of the phone service. So, you know, their profitability from a tax point of view isn't going to be affected or anything like that. But if you look at their balance sheet, you're never going to get an accurate view of the accounts payable situation of that business because they're not properly accounting for the payables, right? They're taking care of those bills on a cash basis where they might officially be following accrual accounting standards, but they're just not following the standards to the, you know, to every degree of what should be done. So that would be another example of an error in the liabilities. And then the third one is just bad bookkeeping. All the time I run into financial statements from businesses that are just not kept very well by people who don't have adequate training or knowledge in bookkeeping or what have you. And so you take those statements, and even if you send them to an accountant to do year-end compiled statements or tax returns or whatever, the whole garbage in, garbage out principle applies. If the information just isn't being kept well, then you're not going to end up with good statements. So those are the errors. The other category would be the stuff that is just legitimately missing for a bunch of other reasons. So in the case of a profitable business, for example, if a corporation was on track to earn $100,000 of profit, we know that there's going to be an income tax bill. but that liability doesn't appear anywhere because until the tax return is done and we know precisely what the liability is done, the debt does not exist. But if you're going to be a good manager of that business, you need to have an awareness that you're going to owe this money, right? Because otherwise you wouldn't be able to properly manage your cash to make sure that you have the money set aside to pay that bill. So that would be a liability that is accruing that would not be appearing in the liability section of a balance sheet. Another example might be something like employee severance. In the story from the book, for example, the owner of the business realized, hey, if I want to correct what's wrong in my business and improve profitability, maybe I need to get rid of some of the people that aren't very productive. But the minute he lays off people, he owes them severance payments, right? And so that represents a liability, a whole bunch of money at once that's got to go out that is not recognized anywhere as a liability. Because until you let the people go, the liability doesn't exist. So that's an example of an unseen liability. So if you bought the shares of that company and it had too many staff and you wanted to let some of those people go, they are in a state of continuous employment. And depending on where you are, you know, what the employment standards are, you're going to owe severance to those people. And so then all of a sudden, even if you got the company for nothing, like, you know, some of these zero down gurus talk about buy a business for a dollar or whatever. If you bought that business for a dollar and you wanted to lay off some staff, guess what? You're going to be out of pocket even more because you've got to come up with money for the severance pay. And so that would be an example of a liability not recorded anywhere. Similarly, something like future payments on lease obligations for an office space. So you sign a 5-year lease on an office space, and you know, if you don't pay the rent or if you try to pack up and move one day, that lease may say that you're suddenly liable for all the future payments all at once. You could be sued, right? Again, that's a liability that exists through a contract that you don't see, right? It doesn't exist. Another obligation, for example, that I've come across a few times would be a supplier obligation for something that a supplier has done. This would be an example of an off-balance sheet debt. So we've all been to gas stations. And as you might imagine, the gas pumps, the dispensers, and those big canopies that protect you from the rain, they cost a lot of money. So independent gas stations will often get oil companies to pay for that stuff for them. And the oil company might invest hundreds of thousands of dollars to put all that stuff in and get it all going. And the way that the gas station pays for it is by paying a higher price per gallon or liter for the fuel. And so it's a debt, but it doesn't appear on their balance sheet, right? And the way that they are going to pay off that debt is by having this higher cost of goods sold. So it's kind of embedded in their purchase contract. And the contract might say that if you don't buy a certain amount of fuel or what have you, or if you try to change brands, whatever balance is outstanding you owe to us, again, that's not going to appear on the balance sheet of a business. Purchase contracts for things like software, subscriptions, all kinds of contracts might exist where you have guaranteed future payments going out into time. Those are not going to appear on a balance sheet. Leasing of equipment. So this is an interesting topic because depending on where you are in the world, accountants are going to account for leases differently. There's two kinds of leases generally. There's operating leases, like if you go rent a car for a month, right? That's just going to appear as an expense. But in certain jurisdictions, certain countries, under certain accounting standards, the lease for equipment that might end up being yours with a nominal payment one day is going to be treated differently. So for example, small items like a photocopier, you might purchase it on a lease where you make a payment every month for 36 months and then you pay a dollar and you own it. A lot of those small item leases will never appear anywhere as a liability, even though you've guaranteed 36 months of payments. They're just going to put the payment as an expense every month. With the bigger items, it's like tractor trailers for a trucking company, for example, the standards have changed over time. So I did a little bit of quick research before starting hitting record today, and the American accountants changed their standards in 2020 to account for these long-term capital leases almost like their debts. So before 2020, if you leased a tractor trailer you just had an expense called truck lease payment, and your balance sheet had no debt. And then after 2020, all of a sudden, the future payments due under that lease appeared on your balance sheet as a liability called obligations under capital lease, right? And so the rules can change, making the company look differently. So as you might imagine, if those capital leases all of a sudden have to appear on the balance sheet, this will have an impact on how people look at the business, things like debt to equity ratios and all that kind of stuff. Again, if you're familiar with an industry and you understand how the industry operates, then you're going to be more able to spot these issues and these problems, right? If you're going to buy a business, there's two ways to buy a business. There's asset sales and there's share purchases. And so sometimes people will get into these scenarios where they'll say, hey, I'm doing an asset purchase. So all these unseen liabilities that are not, you know, they're not in my name. When I buy this business, I don't have to concern myself with those things. The seller's got to take care of them. And while that may legally be true, you know, talk to an attorney. The reality is that you have these trading relationships that hopefully you're going to maintain. This is the reason why you're buying a business. You want the relationships with the customers and the relationships with the suppliers. So if the person you're buying the business from has been obtaining inventory from a supplier and they have not been correctly recording their payables, for example, on their balance sheet, and you don't realize that the suppliers are owed a bunch of money, and you buy the business assuming that the inventory was paid for, and then you try to place orders for more inventory and that and the seller somehow doesn't pay the supplier, then that supplier may try to hold you accountable for the money that they're owed. It may certainly upset any sort of preferential pricing or discounts or something that you're getting. The entire relationship with that seller could be thrown askew, and that could have a very big impact on your business going forward, even though you're not buying the shares of the seller's company, right? And so that's why it's important to have an understanding of what exactly is going on. And as you do your deal making, when you get your deal in place, that you're able to do proper due diligence to really find out what is going on, what is the status of all these relationships, et cetera. In the case from the book, because of the nature of the business and the nature of the who their customers were and the contracts they had in place, an asset sale wasn't really an option. Anyone who wanted to buy that business was going to have to do a share purchase. And so that buyer was going to be taking over that company and all of their obligations. And so in the story, this is where all these other liabilities came about, because the buyer looked at the business and even though it wasn't making money, they thought, wow, there's certain intellectual property and technology in here that could be interesting for us to own. But then what they discovered was, hey, we've got a bloated staff. We're going to have to let people go. We've got this office lease in place that we're going to have to satisfy in some way. And they realized even if we bought it for a dollar, we're then going to be out of pocket all of this other money, even just to wind it up and shut it down, right? And so this is why a poorly performing business, it often doesn't change hands. What ends up happening is they close or they go through some kind of insolvency process. So I do know people who've bought businesses that were in some kind of distress that had liabilities that couldn't be paid. And a lot of these unseen liabilities that I mentioned here today. And oftentimes those transactions involve the services, for example, of a bankruptcy trustee, a licensed insolvency trustee in Canada, or some kind of insolvency process in the US or in another country, where the seller actually has to take the company through a process of satisfying and, you know, dissolving and liquidating those debts, so that the assets can actually be transferred to the buyer in a clean way, with, you know, any money being paid probably going to satisfy those claims against the business. So that's why buying a business for a dollar may not even be a good idea. It might be a lot more expensive than you think. Sometimes people talk about how a business's financial statements may not match the tax returns. So this would be an example of a reason why oftentimes businesses' financial statements don't match tax returns, because the accountants who create rules for reporting they're being motivated by the idea of creating financial statements that accurately portray what's happening in a business for the owners of the business. Okay. So think big companies and shareholders. You know, like if I'm a shareholder in the railroad, I want to know what's happening on the railroad, right? What's happening with the railroad company. So the accountants want to produce statements that let me as a shareholder know what's going on. In these small businesses, the owners typically are the managers. They're in the business. There's no other shareholders. They don't need this high degree of accounting standard, right? And so the accountant's idea of what needs to be reported is not necessarily in alignment with what the government wants to know for the purpose of collecting taxes. So the accountant's decision that long-term capital leases should appear as a liability for reporting purposes may not be mirrored by the government's desire for their tax collection process. They may not want to need to know that, right? The government is interested in collecting a tax across the aggregate of economic activity in the economy. And so if something happens in one business to increase or reduce profitability, for example, if having a capital lease for a piece of equipment allows a business to appear stronger and reduce its taxable income, well, that likely just means that the taxable income over at the leasing company went up by the same amount, right? So any money that the trucking company avoids paying in taxes is money that the leasing company ends up paying in taxes. So governments have a different kind of perspective on what information they want on their document, which is the tax return. And so this is just one of the reasons why these things often don't match up entirely with each other. It's I've heard a lot of people say, well, you know, the financials don't match the tax returns. That's fishy. No, it's not. It's not fishy. It's just that they're different standards and rules for the different kinds of documents. Anyway, I hope you guys have found that interesting. If there is a kind of liability that I have forgotten or a kind of liability that you ran into while looking at a business that was kind of a surprise, please comment down below. I'd love to see what you guys come up with. And if you're serious about buying a business and you want to learn about how it's done and how you can protect yourself, head over to businessbuyeradvantage.com. It's where you can learn about my online training program. Pushing 20 hours of content right now, introducing new modules every year. There is a new module about due diligence that is set to drop in the next month or so. And anyone who signs up at any time, of course, gets access to any of the new future materials that are added. So people that signed up 5 years ago, they've gotten tons of new content with their enrollment. They don't have to ever pay again, et cetera. And so if buying a business is something that's down the road for you and you want to make sure that you do the best job that you can, head over there and sign yourself up. And with that, I'll say thank you very much, and we'll talk to you next time.
So, how can you learn more about buying, selling, financing, and managing small and medium-sized businesses? Easy. Go over to my blog site, davidcbarnett.com, where you can learn more about me and how I work with my clients. You can learn more about my books and courses that I've prepared for you. You can find out how to subscribe to my email list, the YouTube playlists, and more. There's literally hundreds of hours of content there, all for free, and I'd love for you to be my guest. Special thanks go to Mark Willis at Lake Growth Financial, today's video sponsor. Mark helps people better manage their personal and business finances through the Bank on Yourself insurance strategy. This is something I've done personally and I've seen others use it successfully for years. Go to newbankingsolution.com to find all the interviews I've done with Mark and learn more about the advantages of these programs. While there, sign up for a free consultation to learn what this solution might look like for you.